Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to the ISO 9001 2015 Introduction to the World's Most Popular Standard webinar. My name is Joseph Krolikowski. I am the QMS Program Manager for PJR. A couple of notes for our participants today. All of you are on mute, but we do ask that if you have questions, go ahead and utilize the question portion of the dashboard. We will address questions at the end of our presentation. Now, one of the more common questions that we get is whether or not the presentation will be made available after we're finished. We do make our webinars available in two ways. Firstly, if you would like to get a copy of the slides, they will be available for download from our website at www.pjr.com. Additionally, if you'd like to rewatch this webinar with the voiceover, we do post all of our webinar recordings to our YouTube channel. So if you go to YouTube and search Perry Johnson Registrars, you will find the recording of this webinar and all other webinars that we have done. Now, our topics for today, we're going to talk about what is ISO 9001, and we're going to do that by way of deconstructing the scope statement from ISO 9001. The scope statement represents kind of a summary, an overview of what ISO 9001 is all about. We're also going to talk about where the ISO standards come from, and we're going to paint a link to a key item, which is Annex SL. You've probably heard of that. It is the referred to as the high-level outline. We're going to go over ISO 9001 cover to cover, and that is really intended to kind of point out what's where and how the sections are numbered, what have you. I've got a section entitled Key Ideas, which is a deconstructing of some of these key items. This will be helpful, especially if you're brand new to ISO 9001. A couple concluding remarks and then your questions. So let's begin with what is ISO 9001? Well, ISO 9001's official title is Quality Management Systems Requirements. It is in the establishment of a QMS, a quality management system, that a company attains compliance to ISO 9001. And the intent of ISO 9001 is explained in section 1.0 in the scope statement. Now, I've got the full scope kind of outlined here on this slide, but we're going to kind of take this one bite at a time here. So let's begin. Firstly, it says that this international standard, meaning ISO 9001, it specifies requirements for a quality management system. Now, it's important that you understand ISO 9001 is not a product standard. It does not tell you how to manufacture your product. It tells you what you need to do to implement a quality management system. Any organization that gets certified to ISO 9001 is still expected to figure out for itself how the products are going to be made, how the products are going to be controlled, et cetera. When an organization needs to demonstrate its ability to consistently provide products and services, services are considered on equal footing with products in an ISO 9001 environment. So in other words, it is not solely for companies that manufacture a tangible product. If you have a staffing service that you provide, an inspection service, what have you, ISO 9001's principles and practices are just as relevant in your company as they are in a company that manufactures tangible products that meet customer and applicable statutory and regulatory requirements with the aim of enhancing customer satisfaction. Now, this is probably the central cornerstone of ISO 9001. This whole thought process that an organization needs to be attuned and receptive and responsive to the needs and feedback of their customers. That's a key cornerstone of what ISO 9001 is all about. And this is done through the effective application of the quality management system, including processes for improvement of the system and the assurance of conformity to customer and applicable statutory and regulatory requirements. Now, those final statements acknowledge, firstly, that this is not something that you implement and forget. It's an ongoing nature. It's a ongoing process. And it's something where also you should be seeking improvement. Improvement is a concept that is throughout ISO 9001. So that's a very key aspect upon which the standard was written. So where do these standards come from? Well, as the title would imply, they come from an organization called the ISO. That is the International Organization for Standardization. Now, who they are based in Geneva, Switzerland, and it's kind of a collective. They're made up of various international members, and the standards that they write, and they write hundreds of standards, all kinds of different topics. Each of those standards is assigned to a committee. The committee for ISO 9001 is Technical Committee 176. Now, TC 176 has membership from all over the world, and the representatives here in the United States are drawn from the American National Standards Institute. So, to get an understanding of the ordering of clauses and content within ISO 9, we have to take a step back and learn about a document that was published 3 years before ISO 9001. And that document is Annex SL. Now, Annex SL, it was originally called the High Level Outline. And it's actually part of a larger ISO publication called Directives Part 1, Procedures Specific to ISO. Now, Directives Part 1 is a kind of a self-imposed procedure that the ISO established for itself on writing standards. It's a standard on how to write standards. And they flow this down to the committees that prepare these standards. Now, Directives Part 1 is actually a public domain document. Anybody can look at it. And the SL, Annex SL language is included in it. So if you go to iso.org, if you do a search for Directives Part 1 or Annex SL, you will find these documents. They're available to be seen. Now, as I indicated, Annex SL was first published in 2012. And at that time, it was developed by a special committee called the Joint Technical Coordination Group, or JTCG. And what it provided was a 10-section blueprint for writing the ISO family of standards. So the idea is that every standard that ISO publishes will follow this 10-section blueprint. It'll use common numbering and even common terms and core definitions. So in other words, we have a single definition for the term organization. We have a single definition for the term interested party, and so forth. Now, at this point, obviously, all of the standards published by ISO have completed their transition to this format. So just to kind of give you a sense of how this flows, on the left, I have Annex SL Clause 9.2.1. This is part of the internal audit requirement. And as you can see, there are X's in some spaces, And there are also options. In that third paragraph, it says the requirements of this international standard or this part of ISO X or this technical specification. If you go to the right and you look at 9.2.1 subclause A2, it identifies requirements of this international standard. So this is an example of how Annex SL functions and how the committees are expected to use that common language in the development of their standards. So there are 7 auditable sections within ISO 9001 and within Annex SL, obviously by default. And these are titled 4 through 10, and they are as follows. We have context of the organization. This covers things like interested parties, the development of processes, your scope statement, etc. Section 5 is called leadership and commitment. It covers things like the quality policy statement, the establishment of responsibilities and authorities. In section 6, we have planning. This covers three key areas, risk and quality objectives and the planning of changes. In section 7, we have support. There's quite a few things in support. This is where documentation control is discussed. Training is covered here. Calibration of measurement devices is covered here. Section 8 is the largest of the sections in terms of content. And Section 8 is really kind of the day-to-day activities of the typical organization. We have requirements for things like design and production controls and what to do with non-conforming outputs and so forth. And then the standard wraps up the auditable content with Section 9, which is called performance evaluation. This covers things like internal auditing, management review, review of customer feedback, et cetera, and then improvement, which is also the placeholder for the corrective action requirement. So the non-auditable portions in ISO 9001 begin with section 0.1. This one is titled General, and it provides kind of an overview statement, some thoughts on who the standards is intended to benefit, some preliminary discussion on risk-based thinking, plan, do, check, act, and it's also a placeholder for the official definitions of 4 terms that are used. Now, these are Annex SL definitions. The most important of these terms is shall. Whenever you see the term shall in the auditable portion, it implies a mandatory requirement. You have to do it, or you will not get certified to ISO 9001. There are also should statements. Now, in ISO 9001, there are no usages of the term should in the auditable content. It does appear in the non-auditable content, but should is a recommendation. It's not mandatory. May implies a permission. May is actually used once in the auditable content, and then can, which implies possibilities. Could include a few different options. In 0.2, we have a reference to ISO 9000, which is the fundamentals and vocabulary document, and a listing of the 7 quality management principles. Now, these are, you can think of these as kind of high-level ideals, covering things like customer focus and leadership and the process approach. These ideas, if you will, there's a tie-in between these ideas and the content within ISO 9001 itself. In 0.3, there's a deeper dive into the process approach nature of ISO 9001, the fact that it is rooted in company processes. There's a graphic that's provided on what that means, and some further tie-in explained to the plan, do, check, act cycle. In 0.33, we have a definition of the term risk-based thinking and some emphasis on the importance of this concept. In 0.4, there is an explanation of the tie-in between ISO 9001 and the 9000 fundamentals and vocabulary and 9004 guidelines for performance improvement document. Now, just so you're aware, the 9000 and 9004 documents, are both established as guidance documents. They are, the 9000 document is binding in that the definitions are binding, but neither of these are standards you can get certified to. You cannot get 9004 certified or 9000 certified. You can only get 9001 certified. Then we have sections 1 through 3. We've already reviewed what's in section 1, that is the scope statement. Section 2 is normative reference, and this is where it is established that the terms used in ISO 9000 are binding within ISO 9001. So in other words, 9000 provides a definition for organization. That is a binding definition. That's the intent of listing it as a normative reference. And then we have a section 3, which is titled Terms and Definitions. But what's interesting is there are no terms and definitions in section 3. It's only a reference, again, to ISO 9000. Now, it's possible that in the future we may have terms that get defined that are unique to ISO 9001. There are other standards where there's lots of terms that require definition in section 3. At the present time, no special terms in the 2015 revision. Now, we've already looked at sections 4 through 10, what's where therein. So I'll turn our attention then to Annex A. Now, Annex A is kind of an interesting item. Its title is informative, and there's some key points of information and counsel to be found here. These 8 items, there are 8 of them in total. They are intended to provide some clarity on these concepts and to provide a means for the organization to understand some of these more difficult concepts. Firstly, in A1, it is established that you as an organization are not required to align your documentation to ISO 9001. In other words, just because ISO 9001 has competency covered in section 7.2, let's say that you have a competency procedure. You don't have to number that procedure 7.2. You can number it whatever you want. It's your procedure. And you don't have to use the terms that appear in ISO 9001 either. If you want to continue calling your suppliers suppliers, you don't have to suddenly start calling them external providers just because that's the term that ISO 9001 uses. So that's established in A1. In A2, there is an unpacking, if you will, of the intent in changing references of product to read products and services, and we've already sort of explored that a bit today. In A3, there is some explanation provided on the term interested parties and who that is intended to include and why this is a key concept in ISO 9001. In A4, there's a good explanation that's provided on the concept of risk-based thinking and how you are supposed to approach it as a user of ISO 9001. And it's emphasized, and this is also key, that you don't have to have a formal process for risk management. That was never the intent. The intent was more that this was going to be something that would form part of your thinking in day-to-day activities in your system. From there, we have A5, applicability. For this, you have to understand that the prior version of ISO 9001 had a concept called permissible exclusions. Now, this concept was discontinued in ISO 9001 2015, but it was replaced with an idea called non-applicable clauses. The basis for that decision is unpacked a bit in A5. In A6, we introduce the term documented information and provide some context for understanding how it replaced the terms procedure, record, and document. In A7, we have a concept that is new, or was new, I should say, at the time, and that was organizational knowledge. This concept is a little more thoroughly unpacked in A7 so that you can understand the intent and how you might approach it. And finally, control of externally provided products and services. And A8 is intended to give you some understanding of what's meant by the term external provider and what you are expected to do with those parties. The standard wraps up with Annex B, which provides some linkages between ISO 9001 and the other related ISO standards, and finally, a bibliography. So, taking all of these things together, if you're brand new to ISO 9001, I'd like for you to kind of think in terms of the five big ideas. And that's what we're going to kind of go over now, are the five key ideas that are found in ISO 9001. The things that you need to understand about why the standard says what it says and why the requirements are set up in the manner that they are. So let's begin with scope. Now, in section 4.3, you are expected to develop a scope statement. Now, the scope statement, firstly, what you need to understand about it, it is not a marketing statement. We've had clients in the past that pull a paragraph off their website and say, this is what we do. And it's full of all kinds of qualitative verbiage and marketing speak. And while that may be something that you're proud of, it's not a scope statement in the manner intended by the standard. So here are some examples of acceptable scope statements. Design, fabrication, and assembly of collapsible tripods, plating, heat treating, and sorting of metal stampings, etc. Now, the scope statement that you develop will eventually, hopefully, be the same as that shown on the ISO 9001:2015 certificate that we issue to you. So, couple of things to bear in mind. First of all, don't list an item in your scope that isn't going to be available for audit. So if you have, for example, field installation in your scope statement, understand that we need to go in the field. We're going to do an audit of that field installation activity. We can't list it on the certificate if we haven't audited it. And that goes even for something that you've purchased for in-house that isn't up and running yet. So that's a key point to bear in mind. Also, be very careful about being too wordy in your scope statement. Let's say, for example, that you want your scope to be laser cutting, water jet cutting, progressive die cutting, plating, heat treating, and distribution of flanges, springs, shims, bolts, and barrels. That's a whole lot of stuff. And that means that when we come on site to do our audit, we have to see laser cutting, water jet cutting, progressive die cutting, plating, heat treating, distribution, and we also have to look at flanges, springs, shims, bolts, and barrels. That's a lot of stuff for us to look at, and it may mean added audit time and added expense. Now, another core idea that is mentioned early in section 4.4 is the directive that you have to determine what your processes are and how they interact with each other. Now, section 4.4 states that a quality management system is made up of processes. Now, this whole concept of process, this is a key process, or a key concept rather, in ISO, not just in ISO 9001, but of all the ISO family of standards. We actually have an entire webinar entitled The Interaction of Processes and Its Importance to a Successful Audit. If you're new to ISO 9001, I highly recommend that you watch that webinar. There are recordings of it available on our YouTube page. It's definitely something you need to check out. Now, the concept of processes, it cascades throughout ISO 9001. And here's a few examples of how it's mentioned. They talk about the process approach as early as section 511 when they're talking about management activities. It's mentioned in section 621 that your quality objectives need to be developed for your processes. Competent staff for your processes, as mentioned in section 7.1. Making sure that you have infrastructure to support your processes is mentioned in section 7.1, and so forth. So this is an idea that's mentioned early in the standard, and then it's a concept that is repeated throughout the standard. So you need to know what your processes are. Now, we encourage you to make your processes as personal and unique to your business as possible. They are your processes. This is going to go a long way towards adding value to your organization and making this more than just getting a certificate for the wall. And please resist the urge to name your processes after the sections of ISO 9001. Make them as personal as possible. Our third key idea is accountability. Now, ISO 9001 demands inclusion of all the persons that fall within the scope of the system. So if your scope is design, manufacture, and distribution of shims, well, that's everybody from management right down to the people on the line that are making the shims. And management, speaking of management, is called out directly in section 5.1.1. And it states that management needs to make itself accountable for the effectiveness of the system. That's called out right in section 5.1.1a. And it is something that we hold you accountable to during the audit process. Management is called out and they are expected to demonstrate that they are aware of the system and are active participants. There's a lot of other places where accountability is demanded. Product release records or inspection records have to name names. That's required in 8.6. If you have problems, you have to take appropriate systemic action. That's called out in section 10.2. Organizations have to define roles, responsibilities, and authorities in 5.3. People need to be cognizant of the quality policy, 5.2. and how they contribute to the effectiveness of the quality management system, 7.3. So accountability is a big idea, it's a key idea. Fourth key idea is effectiveness. Now there's a number of requirements that mandate that you measure the effectiveness of something. And the idea is that at any given time, you should know how well or how poorly things are going in your quality management system or within your company. Now, the basic idea of effectiveness measures begins in section 4.4.1c. And here's the verbiage that it says. The organization has to determine and apply the criteria and methods, including monitoring, measurements, and related performance indicators needed to ensure the effective operation and control of processes. Now, that idea of effectiveness continues in several other areas. We have tracking of quality objectives, 6.2.1, evaluation of competency actions in 7.2, customer satisfaction, 9.12, internal auditing, 9.3, management review, 9.3, internal auditing, 9.2, excuse me. And so forth. Lots of places where you are asked to measure the effectiveness of your activities and take responsive action if things are not functioning as they are intended to. Now, the final cornerstone concept we're going to talk about is improvement. Now, improvement has actually, the idea of improvement has been part of the standard going all the way back to the year 2000. And at that time, it was referred to as continual improvement. Now, the manner in which we approach improvement now, it's a bigger idea. There's continual improvement, yes, but there's also reactive changes, there's breakthroughs, et cetera. It's a bigger picture now than what it had been before. Now, the primary clause for improvement is section 10.1, which states that you shall determine and select opportunities for improvement and implement necessary actions to meet customer requirements and enhance customer satisfaction. But of course, there are other places where improvement is mentioned. In section 4.4, it says that you have to continually improve your system. In 5.1.1, it requires that management promotes improvement. In 5.2, it says that your quality policy has to address improvement. In 5.3, it says that responsibilities have to include improvement. In 6.1, risk action efforts need to target improvement, and so forth. So there is tie-in. Again, as you can see, this is a concept that permeates multiple parts of the quality management system. So ISO 9001 is still the world's most utilized standard. There are just over 900,000 worldwide registered companies. And if you're seeking certification, you would do well to bear in mind the big picture of what ISO 9001 is trying to promote within your company. Now, if you're ready for a deeper dive, if you're ready to start exploring the standard clause by clause, we do have a free course on our website. It's entitled ISO 9001 2015, a clause by clause analysis. It is, if you go on our website and look under training, you will find the link for it. It presents each clause in turn and provides explanation on what is meant by that clause. So if you're brand new, I definitely encourage you to check that out. Now, some of you may have heard some chatter about a new version of ISO 9001 coming out. Now, all we know at this very early stage is that there is some preliminary work being done. The committees are coming together, members in the committees are being nominated and so forth. We don't have any firm dates in terms of publication. We have no information on what the changes are going to be, no information on a transition timeline. So if anyone is wondering about the new version of ISO 9001, at this point, all you need to know is it's a long ways off, probably 2 to 3 years off at minimum. So bear that in mind. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. I have a companion webinar to this one. It's entitled ISO 9001 2015, Anticipating Auditor Expectations in Key Areas. It's a little bit more of a deeper dive. It's meant for companies that have already implemented ISO 9001. I have a webinar entitled Your Ongoing Relationship with PJR. And I apologize for the misprint on the screen here. That webinar has already been presented. It will be presented again in the future. It's an unpacking of what happens when things change within your company and how that needs to be funneled through PJR. It also provides an explanation of our dispute process. And also, I always like to mention the Interaction of Processes webinar, which we mentioned earlier today. Now, if you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, the best way for you to do that is to visit our website at www.pjr.com. Go to the bottom of the page, enter your email address in the provided space, and click subscribe. You will be opted in for automatic updates on new webinars, changes to the standard, and other points of helpful information. I do thank you for your time. I'm going to go ahead and unlock the question portion of the dashboard. Just as a reminder, if you're looking for copies of the slides today, those will be available for download from our website shortly after we're finished. And if you'd like to rewatch this webinar or share it with colleagues with the voiceover, it will be available for viewing shortly on our YouTube page. So let's see if we have any questions today. Okay, it would appear there are no questions, so I will thank everyone for their time. I hope everyone has a fantastic afternoon. Thank you.